And welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And now we're going to bite into the history of what writer Rowan Jacobson calls some of the leading protagonists in the story of American ingenuity, diversity, and prosperity. He's not talking about the country's founding fathers, but about its founding fruit, the apple.
Well, if you shop for apples today, you probably notice a few varieties. Red Delicious, Granny Smith, Macintosh, and maybe if your supermarket is a bit adventurous, the occasional bag of the delicious Honeycrisp. But those are just a small, sad fraction of what Jacobson says used to be nearly, get this, 7,000 varieties of apples in the country. Henry David Thoreau described them as possessing racy and wild American flavors.
And many of those racy varieties of apple were grown right here in Boston. They had names like the Porter, the Baldwin, the Pear Main, and Dorchester's Tolman Sweet. So what happened to all those apples, and can we get them back? These questions and more are at the core of Jacobson's new book entitled Apples of Uncommon Character, 123 Heirlooms, Modern Classics, and Little-Known Wonders. He'll be appearing tomorrow night at the Harvard Bookstore to talk about his book, and he joins us now. And Rowan Jacobson, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
It's a beautiful book and just fun to look at. And obviously to read, but beautiful photography. And your interest in apples began with the purchase of a farmhouse in Vermont. What happened up there?
It was an old farmhouse, you know, one of the classic New England ones that was built in the 1830s. And it came with a bunch of really gnarled old apple trees in the backyard, which had been planted clearly several owners before me. And when fall came around, each one had these amazing globes of all sorts of different colors on them, and they clearly were not those apples that you just talked about that I was used to seeing in the supermarket.
Right. So what did you find? What kind of varieties were there at the farmhouse?
Well, after checking out with a few apple geeks in my area who knew that kind of thing, one of them I nailed as the Roxbury Russet, which is, of course, right from here. It's the oldest apple variety in America. It goes back to about 1630, still apparently popular with whoever was living in my house about 100 years ago. Some of the others are still mysteries to me and other people, but they clearly are not supermarket ready.
Well, talk a little bit about, I mean, we mentioned, Meghna and I, in the intro, 7,000 varieties of apples.
Yeah, and the USDA can back me up on that. They're the ones that came up with that statistic.
So what happened? Because as we suggested, when we think about apples, we think about, I don't know, three, four, maybe a half a dozen typically available in stores. What happened to this vast and wonderful variety of apples?
Two things. Prohibition, which pretty much took out all the apples that were specifically for making into hard cider. People literally chopped down their trees when that was no longer cool. And industrial agriculture. Out west, especially in Washington State, they started producing these huge, huge orchards of Red Delicious at a very low price. And the national distribution chains that were just coming into play in the country, that's exactly what they wanted. They didn't want to have to be buying from lots of little local orchards. They wanted one apple that they could stock through their whole system. And they did.
And did that in turn kind of change the way we think about apples? In other words, Red Delicious is a big, red, shiny apple, and I guess over many generations, that's what we've come to think of as an apple, right?
Yeah, we kind of did it to ourselves. Consumers constantly chose the redder apple over the tastier, uglier apple, yeah. And so they gave us what we wanted until we wound up with the reddest and least tasty apple of them all.
Well, you know, what I love just leafing through the book are just all the wonderful names, just going page to page. I'm just going to read a few of them just to give the listener a chance, an idea here. Porter, Pound Sweet, Rhode Island Greening, Rome Beauty, Smokehouse, Snow, Spokane Beauty, Stamen, 20-ounce Pippin, Virginia Gold, Wolf River. It's beautiful. So your book covers 123 varieties of apples, and I'd love to ask you about the ones you recently highlighted in a piece for the Boston Globe. And these are apples that were really that really sprung from the soil of Boston and right around here, right?
And they adapted to local conditions to become the truly Boston apples. The very first orchard in America was planted on Beacon Hill in 1623, I think it was. And
who knew? The first orchard in America, right on Beacon Hill.
Yeah.
Wow. And the Baldwin, so formerly Boston's favorite apple, There's actually a statue in Wilmington of this apple. Tell us about the Baldwin.
Considered the greatest apple in the world back in the mid-1800s. That's where, and that statue was erected in the late 1800s because the Baldwin was this world conqueror. Started off right outside the city and spread through the city, became the number one apple in Boston by 1800 or so. And by 1850, it was grown throughout the Northeast and exported all over the world. And there's still people today who, when they taste a Baldwin, to them, that is the essential taste of an apple.
Mm. And what did it taste like?
To me, it's a very distinctive note. It's a little tiny bit winey. It's definitely tart. There's sweetness there, but there's a lot of tart to go with the sweet. And then there's a kind of a winey touch to it that's more complex than what we tend to find in a supermarket today.
You mentioned as well an apple called the Roxbury Russet. Tell us about this apple. And does it refer to the Roxbury, the neighborhood in Boston that we're all familiar with?
Yeah, it sprung up there right around 1630. Wow. It was actually a seedling from that original 1623 orchard. And it also became one of the most popular apples in New England. It's a russet that refers to that skin. And you might have seen these apples out there in heirloom orchards. It's almost like a sandpapery brown skin on them. And people, when they see it, they tend to steer away from it because it certainly doesn't look like a Red Delicious or even a Granny Smith. But those russet apples, they're harder than other apples. So they're really crunchy and they have this really nice kind of a brown sugary flavor to them.
Mm. You know, I've learned so much reading. One of the things that I just love, this detail that you put in your book, that apples don't come from truly from the seed, right? In other words, you can't bring seeds of say, a Roxbury russet and expect to grow a Roxbury russet. Do I have that right?
Exactly. And that's kind of the key to the whole apple creativity thing. The reason the apple is our most creative fruit is because every single seed will produce a new variety if you plant it. And apples grow really well in throughout New England. So when the colonists came here, they planted tons and tons of seeds. They didn't all know that they weren't going to get the same kind of apple. That knowledge wasn't common. So it was this accidental experiment in genetics where suddenly we had tens of thousands of potential new varieties out there. Most of them weren't very good, so nobody ever tried to make more of them.
Right. So if you wanted to plant an orchard of Roxbury russets, you had to actually take a clipping from one tree and plant that, right?
Right. Asexual reproduction. So you take a cutting, graft it to a different rootstock, and you'll get the exact same apple.
Fantastic. So you have some confidence that there's a bit of an apple renaissance taking shape, that we might get some of this wonderful, that we're on course toward getting some of this wonderful variety back.
For sure. And New England is the area that's really leading this renaissance, I think. There are more heirloom orchards out there, and pick your own orchards with a lot of these old varieties than you find anywhere else. And also hard cider. Yeah. New England is kind of leading the hard cider renaissance too. So a lot of the varieties that were lost, because these trees can go 100, 200 years and wait to be rediscovered, we didn't quite lose them. There's still enough of them out there that now we're able to get them back.
So what's the evidence? What's out there that suggests this renaissance is taking place? You're just seeing more sort of heirloom apple orchard businesses and folks setting this kind of business up?
Absolutely. A lot of heirlooms, people planting thousands and thousands of cider trees. Hard cider is made with fruit that's very specific to that, just like you make good wine with grapes that are specialized for that. So there are people going big into cider fruit. And then you're also just seeing at fairs. I'm going to be up at the Common Ground Fair in Maine this weekend. And you go there and you just see, you know, lines of these hairy hipsters, you know, the 25-year-old farmers of the world, all asking which apples they should plant on their farms.
That's great. So you've brought some apples in here and you've brought some hard cider. Tell me about what's in front of me here and let's taste this.
All right. So these are a couple of those cider apples I was just talking about. And this will prove to you that cider apples are not for eating fresh. You may not thank me for it, but the first one is called a Red Streak, and it's a bitter sharp. So you get some acid, and then you get bitterness on the end. But it's kind of a soft, almost like a tea kind of a bitter.
It's good, but bitter. Bitter is the thing. And now I want to say that these apples are little. I mean, they're not the kind of big, red, shiny apple that you might be drawn to in the store, but they serve a purpose, obviously.
Yeah, and often the good cider apples are small. Mm-hmm. They're almost easier to work with, and they have more ratio of skin to flesh, and the skin is where you get the tannins.
Yeah. All right, and compare this to the next one.
All right, the next one, this is a bittersweet, an Ashton bitter. Very bitter, hard tannins at the end. Mm-hmm. This is the one where you can't talk for a while afterward.
Right, it's sort of puckering my mouth up a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
Mm. But it's kind of nice. Mm. But not for eating. So the result is we have a nice big bottle of hard cider there. Tell me about this.
So these apples we just ate taste terrible fresh, but you ferment them and they ferment beautifully into what we're about to drink, which is a hard cider from Farnham Hill in Lebanon, New Hampshire. These guys were kind of the first ones on the scene to be doing traditional New England cider. And this is a pretty good example of, in 1750, how you would have gotten drunk in Boston.
So this is a hard cider that has, what, about a 6 or 7% alcohol content, so percent by volume of alcohol. So comparable to a strongish beer.
Exactly. And that's where apples tend to ferment out to. If you ferment them dry, it's usually 5 to 7%. So more like beer than wine.
Hmm. So I'm curious, Rowan, what can, I don't know, the everyday shopper do to be an active participant in this second age of apples that you're obviously rooting for?
Right. Well, you can definitely do very well at the orchards that are, you know, within an hour of the city. There's some pretty good pick-your-own orchards. Tower Hill is a fantastic garden a little farther out with an amazing selection of maybe 100 varieties of apples. But even Whole Foods right here in Boston is really, they're confident that heirloom apples can sell well now. Mm-hmm. So they've actually just asked me to work with them to kind of expand their heirloom program. So I think throughout New England, you're going to see some weird-looking apples in Whole Foods in the next few years.
And that's the point, isn't it? You know, we've got, my family owns a piece of property up in New Hampshire that's been in the family for a while, and there's some ancient apple trees that produce these little gnarly, not pretty fruit at all, but they're delicious. I'd love to know what they are. But, I mean, I guess the lesson here is it may not be a beautiful thing to look at, but it can still be a great thing to eat.
Absolutely. And beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And what we see as beautiful might be a little different than what they saw as beautiful when that tree was planted.
All right. Well, that's Rowan Jacobson. He's a James Beard Award-winning writer. His new book is Apples of Uncommon Character, 123 Heirlooms, Modern Classics, and Little Known Wonders. He'll be talking tomorrow night at the Harvard Bookstore, and he'll be taking part in a panel at the Let's Talk About Food Festival on September 27th. A lot more information about apples, about Rowan Jacobson, at RadioBoston.org. And Rowan, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Well, a bit later in the show, where do you go to check in on the Scottish independence vote? Jamaica Plain, of course. Seriously, we will. That's coming up later. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.